The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Ray Bjorklund. Ray is the president and CEO of Birch Grove Consulting, and Ray is my go-to man with regard to taking a look at the budget, the fiscal profile for the federal government, and what to expect in the coming year. And Ray, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation. And as I've said many, many times, you're the one person I know personally. And I don't know, maybe there's somebody else out there. I can put that caveat on there, who actually reads every single page of the proposed, you know, president's proposed budget. But I know you have done that. You do it every year, and then you put together your analysis of what's going on. And I guess first, you know, can you just talk about the numbers and where we are? And I know you approach it from what addressable, you know, spend for contractors. That's your focus in the market. But just the big picture overall, what's that budget look like?
Big picture, a lot of people get excited about the $4 trillion budget. But
Right. Obviously
you have to dig a little deeper and find out what is meaningful is mandatory spend, which has some contractor addressability in it, and certainly discretionary part of the budget, which has a lot of contractor addressability. And by that, I mean those dollars that are intended to be spent on contracts, whether it's for incumbents or for new work. And so some people also go by the Federal Procurement Data System as a tool of measuring what that spend is, which is woefully inadequate showing what the real number is, because the real number, as I'm forecasting for, let's see, pull it up here, the precise number for fiscal year 2017, I'm saying it's going to be approximately $742 billion.
Approximately,
give or take a few billion.
Right.
And, you know, it's a big joke, too, that when you look at the budget and do the analysis on it, that $1 million is a rounding error.
Right. Well, Ray, just a quick question on that. You know, your number, which I have a great deal of confidence in, it's around $742 billion dollars versus what we, you know, consistently hear. I mean, regardless of, you know, administrations, it's in the $400 to $500 million range. There's always this delta. Can you between the numbers that the government puts out, regardless of who it is, in OMB, versus the numbers that you consistently come up with? Is it part of that FPDS issue, or what? You know, is it the contractor addressable within that mandatory, you know, pot of money that makes up our $4 trillion budget? I say that jokingly.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Which includes paying on the interest on the debt, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, and don't forget that. So,
yeah, well, a lot of people, I would say, a number of the commentators that you hear from talk about the $450, $500 billion. And that generally is driven by the Federal Procurement Data System, FPDS. The FPDS doesn't include everything. And even this number that I just gave you, the $742 billion, doesn't include everything, because there is a very deeply classified portion of the budget, which we don't see. It's not public. But why is the number 740 versus 550? That's because FPDS doesn't capture everything. It doesn't capture a lot of the purchase card transactions. It doesn't capture about a third of the GSA schedule orders. It doesn't capture dollars from FDIC. It doesn't capture a lot of the dollars from OPM, which doesn't do classified work, but they write contracts for insurance programs,
right? Yeah,
for, you know, retired and current duty feds. those billions of dollars don't show up in the FPDS. So there's a lot of agencies that don't report. There's a lot of agencies that don't report because of deeply classified material. And then there's some that just have waivers that don't report. Tennessee Valley Authority. You know, they spend billions of dollars a year in contracts, and they are a government agency, but they don't report.
Right. So that's a, I mean, when you really talk, I mean, so you're talking like a one-third delta there, right? Just yeah. approximately 750 versus 500. That's amazing amount of transactions that aren't necessarily considered or covered, you know. So when you hear people talk about reducing, you know, the spend through whatever measure has been taken, you know, that's 10%. That's, you know, that's measured as $40 billion. Now, that whether it's, you know, as a result of budgets being decreased or, you know, practices and changes in procurement systems or best practices versus, you know, the 750, it's kind of a confusing story, isn't it? And that's not, that's just a comment on the environment we live in, right? Not
exactly.
It's not a comment on any particular, you know, focus.
Right. And, you know, when the FPDS, and it, I even forgot the original name of it, but those, the older system, you know, it was hard to get a hold of the data from a public viewpoint. And over time, governments made more and more of this available. So you look at the transactions from FPDS for a year, and we're talking about 3 million contract actions, modifications, new work, closeouts, and all that. You say, well, that's a lot of transactions. That must be everything.
Right.
And so, you know, there's that touchstone. The FPDS becomes a touchstone. And, you know, I wouldn't step on that stone trying to cross a river because I might sink.
Right. Well, yeah. And your observation about it is sort of consistent. It's been eons ago, almost 10 years. But the SARA panel, when it did its review of the procurement system, you know, one of the frustrations that the panel members had was the lack of, you know, consistent sort of accurate data
yes.
about, you know, transactions to be able to use to make, you know, good decisions. So that's an interesting dynamic. But you know, your current thinking is about 742. That doesn't include the black programs, the dark programs.
The deep black programs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of classified spending in it because so many, particularly in the defense and homeland security, so many of the programs have classified components. But you don't see them broken out. You just see overall a contract program.
Yeah. Well, you've got some, you know, I know, you know, when we've talked, you have some, you know, sort of observations about takeaways about the market. And I want to run through some of these. And one of the first things that you've observed is you characterize as it's a large, attractive market that's gradually improving. But there's uncertainties in the defense civilian balance. What is that all about? That balance, that second half of that.
Yeah. I mean, when, you know, when I was doing the forecasting contract spending several years ago, you could see that the trend was down. And, you know, we saw that play out, but over time things start to come back a little bit. So overall the market it's what I call anemic. You know, it's
right.
not a great growth. But it's big.
It's 1 or 2%, right, or something, or isn't it even that much? Tell me.
Yeah,
tell me
just
the number.
A couple percentage points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On
for the overall
annual growth rate, right, compound annual growth rate. But you know, specifically to your point about this civilian defense balance, you know, in congressional appropriations, there usually is a pretty significant dividing line between what is being considered for civilian agencies and what is being considered for defense agencies because of the Armed Services Committees in the Senate and the House, and they treat those programs separately. So there's a balance. And when the Budget Control Act of 2011, which gave us this the joy of sequestration
yes,
back in
yes.
2013, when the BCA...
Joy of like going to the dentist.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. The BCA... you know, kept those two lines separate. And as the budget deals have occurred between the White House and Congress over the last two Decembers, there was an effort to try and protect defense a little bit more because some of those major programs actually cost you more if you start messing around with them and pulling the rug out from underneath their appropriations. And so there's, and of course, the Congress is generally pretty supportive of defense, as the executive branch is. And so there's a little bit extra support for that. And, you know, you heard Dr. Carter recently saying that, you know, he was kind of happy that Congress gave him a little bit of wiggle room. It's like a 2-year deal sort of balance. But if we get a new administration in, or if we get a significant change in Congress again this upcoming election, there may be more fiscal conservatives in that may turn that screw a little bit tighter on defense. And so that might permit the civilian agencies to grow a little bit more. Or it might, if they don't tighten the screw, might let the defense agencies grow a little bit more. So there's a little uncertainty in how that balance works out, because if you're trying to fence off and protect defense spending in some ways, you're probably doing that ultimately at the expense of a lot of civilian agencies.
Yeah, right. And on that point, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, Ray, let's continue our discussion of the budget. Talk about, although it's sort of flat growth, there's lots of interesting thing going on below the surface. And I know you've had a chance to take a look at that. Again, my guest today is Ray Bjorklund of Birch Grove Consulting, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund from Birch Grove Consulting. And Ray, when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about the defense civilian balance in the budget and the uncertainties there. And I guess one of the things that's part of that discussion before we talk about the, you know, what's going on underneath the surface of the budget numbers that are available to contractors or programs in general. And that's, I guess it's called the third offset.
Yes.
Is that okay? So, and that's a DOD, phenomena, I guess, is a way to describe it. Can you talk about, and what does that mean for that uncertainty? What is the third offset and what does it mean for the uncertainty?
Yeah, I don't profess to be a total expert on the third offset. That is to recognize that there are disruptive technologies, there are disruptive ways of doing things, doctrine, that have transformed agencies as large as Department of Defense over the last decades. And this particular third offset is looking more for some of those other kinds of disruptive technologies. So nobody's got a handle on this yet. But as you noticed, a lot of the leadership from defense has been making trips out west to Silicon Valley.
Yes, please, and come do business with us. Yes. Pretty place, yes.
Yeah. And so they're looking for those kinds of ideas that could be disruptive and create a different defensive capability. And so that means...
So would an example of that be like, you know, and we're not, I know you're not an expert, but I'm... Yeah, but I have you on my show. So right now, and what did you stay at? What is it? Comfort Inn? What is the right thing? Where'd you sleep last night? No. But like drone technology, that's something nobody ever, and all of a sudden, we got, drones covering the planet, right?
Well, I mean, DOD has been kicking that around since the early 1990s, but when they finally figured out in the early days of even before Iraqi freedom started and before those operations started, they started using them more and more. And then we heard those first reports of a CIA drone, firing a Hellfire missile and killing some insurgents. That's a little bit of a disruptor. Mm-hmm. And, I think in a more sophisticated way, thinking about what, and that's pretty sophisticated, but thinking about what... the reach out is to Silicon Valley. They're looking for maybe ways of doing social engineering, to do analysis of large data sets, to figure out how you can do offense and defense in the cyber world at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, nobody's really got the handle on it. We're exploring.
Sure.
And so, back to your first, sort of the genesis of the question was, how's that going to affect the civilian military balance in the budget? And if DOD can find some of these technologies that are worth exploring, there's going to be money set aside in the research and development appropriations to be able to explore those and find out if those kinds of technologies or phenomena can actually be translated into a set of requirements and therefore ultimately into a system. And, you know, therein lies part of the problem is that DOD doesn't really know what their requirements are.
Right.
A lot of the very senior leadership, particularly the military leadership, has grown up with one set of requirements, one type of force structure.
Sure. Yeah.
Which, you know, has changed significantly over the last several years because we've learned how to deal more with, you know, aggressive technologies like IEDs. We've learned more about how to deal with counterterrorism operations to figure out what those kinds of bad guys are doing, which is very asymmetric. And, you know, that's not tanks driving across the desert.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like it was in Desert Storm.
Right.
So, you know, that they're looking for that. So you really don't know what that is. But in the meantime, the force structure is what it is because the force structure is pretty much, control, but it's sort of directed by the appropriations and authorization process. So the Armed Services Committees have said, this is the kinds of programs we want.
Right.
Well, that's based on DOD requirements, but DOD doesn't know quite what the requirements are going to be for the future. And so, yes, if this is some disruptive technology is going to require an investment in some really large, hard platforms, that could be very disruptive. If it's going to be, how do you tweak the software? This can be disruptive, but not as expensive to execute
right.
on.
Yeah.
So we don't know. It's just a lot of uncertainty.
That's fascinating stuff. And even just within the, I know there's the contingency fund, overseas
operations
fund.
Yes.
And that, I mean, even there, I mean, you could see changes in the next year or even just, it seems like I think there was an article a couple of days ago about, you know, setting up smaller, I guess, installations or operations across Iraq potentially now. I think I saw that in a paper. I mean, that's more money as well. And just in terms of that defense civilian balance, and that's about shifting monies. And that's where I wanted to go next. I mean, one of the things that you do a lot when you're looking at the budget, especially, it's just not one number doesn't tell the story. That's that top number. There's a lot that goes on in terms of moving money around or proposing budgets that reflect priorities of a particular administration. And what then that translates, you do the great job of translating what that means for contract spend and potential opportunities. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on? I know that's a big question because it's a big budget, but if you want to just give an example, what you take a look at and how you can, and how, what it could mean for a contractor in a particular sector or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if we talk about the growth in the budget being only a couple of percentage points year to year, you know, it's not a lot of exciting, you know, from the top line, it's not very exciting. And so you look at it, you say, well, gee, budget isn't really changing very much. So what am I going to do? Am I going to take wallet share? Am I going to take market share? Am I going to say nothing's changing, so the market's not growing, so I'm going to walk away? And there's lots of things to do. But if you start looking beneath the surface, you can take a flat budget and you start drilling down to the component parts of it. Life gets real fascinating. I mean, for me, the budget wonk, you know, it gets real fascinating because then you start to see.
Well, fascinating translates into opportunity for a lot of people.
It does.
All right.
That's what makes me excited about it is because when you dig down, you find out this one agency has got, you know, let's say $50 million of contract spend that they've been putting through contracts for the last couple of years. And then you suddenly see here's a program that's being cut by $25 million. But another new program is being increased by 25. And now you see there is an opportunity. Not for the incumbent who's losing the $25 million program, but how that money's being shifted to another new kind of opportunity. You just have to look deeper and deeper in the budget. And I quote unquote read the budget. It's 15,000 pages.
Why'd you put the quotes there, Ray?
Quotes, because I'm not a speed reader, and I don't read every word, but I look at the numbers.
Yeah, you look at all the numbers, that's for sure, right?
Right. You know, it's like 113,000 rows in my spreadsheet right now. So I look at the numbers, and I say, oh, this is increasing, or that's decreasing. What's going on? And then I open up the text, and I start reading the text to figure out what's going on. You know, your comment about the OCO, or Overseas Contingency Operations, you know, that was a tool that the Bush administration introduced to have separate accountability for spending associated with operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, other places in Southwest Asia. And it isn't just DOD, it's also Department of State. And, you know, over time, the Obama administration said, we got to get rid of that. And Congress says, yeah, I got to get rid of it. Because we need to get back to sort of the baseline and know what our total number is. But under the Budget Control Act of 2011, that money is generally protected from sequestration. So let's figure out ways of putting more into the OCO line to protect it. And so even while you saw over the last couple of years, the Obama administration was phasing out OCO in this budget request for 2017, they're ramping it up again.
Right.
Because there still is a continuing need to, you know, now it's mainly against ISIS, ISIL, you know, to go against those kinds of targets and that kind of threat. So, you know, things change. It may look flat on the surface, but there's a lot of exciting stuff going on underneath.
Right. Hey, geez, Ray, we're already up on the break.
Oh.
Wow. So, in you know, when we come back, let's continue our discussion of the budget, and we can start, you know, you can provide your pearls of wisdom for contractors as they look at this budget. I know there's issues of, you know, margins and, you know, risk, and who do you really want as your customer, and things people need to think about. This would be a fascinating discussion. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund of Birch Grove Consulting. Awesome analysis, inspired insight. That's Ray Bjorklund. And Ray, with that introduction, let's get back to it. Hey, you know, one of the things I did want to ask you about that I know you've observed as a trend that's going on in the proposed budgets is at the beginning of the show, you talked about mandatory versus discretionary, and it all totals up to a $4 trillion budget. And if I'm right, it's about 2/3, right? Mandatory, 1/3, maybe approximately.
I mean, about 1/3 discretionary.
Yeah. But there's seems to be some, I don't know, movement. I don't know what the right word is, effort to identify additional mandatory spending. Can you give an example of that? And why would, I think why, the very term mandatory tells you why people would be doing that. But, you know, what it's almost, it's like a budget tactic, it seems to me, right? So.
Yes. Yeah. And I would say the Obama administration recently has been probably more active in attempting to do that. The rationale behind moving money, or say moving a set of budgetary requirements from a discretionary budget to mandatory, means, yes, it's mandatory, but it means that there's increasing stability in the program. So with Congress and the White House together being as dysfunctional as they are, and being able to refund the Highway Trust Fund, for instance, reauthorize it and reappropriate. Now, when you have the inability to reauthorize and reappropriate on a regular basis when those funds start running low, his concept, let's say the administration's concept, was if we move, say, the Transportation Trust Fund, which has a lot of contractor addressable spend in it, if we move that from discretionary to mandatory, then we will kind of protect it. And it'll give some stability in the program. And state and local governments who depend largely on that money aren't going to have to worry about it as much. But when you take it out of the discretionary bucket, which is getting smaller and smaller, and put it in the mandatory, which is getting larger and larger. Congress doesn't like that because they can't control the appropriations unless they repeal the law.
Right, yeah.
And so he's looking for that. And even in this 2017 budget, there are several other instances where the Obama administration has been asking to set up new accounts that are mandatory and move the discretionary funding over to mandatory. Congress generally doesn't like that for reasons I just said. So it's probably not going to get a lot of traction. But if something does go into mandatory, it's like I tell clients, pay attention to how your contract is financed. Okay, if it's financed out of mandatory, it's one thing. If it's financed out of offsetting collections, which might be going into a mandatory-based trust fund,
right,
it's different. If it, you know, and so you got to look in the longer term where your revenue stream is going to come from, and you know, not just look at it as one big lump sum kind of, gee, if I win the $3 billion contract, I'm really going to be in good shape. For how long?
Right.
Are you competing with somebody because it's a multiple award contract? You know, you got to look realistically over the longer term. How well is the program going to execute?
Yeah. Along those lines, I know you're starting to go, it's a good segue. So one of the things you talk about is, you know, who do you want as your customer? What, and, you know, you can look at, you know, tactical sort of, you know, transactions versus strategic transactions or approaches to the market. And who do you want, you know, you get to, you know, decide what you're going to compete for. So, you know, what do you mean by that? And what kind of, you know, filter should companies think about when they're going to markets? A federal market is a different place.
It is different. And my point about picking a suitable customer means find a customer that you know you can collaborate with, work with, that you can certainly provide value because that's what the customer, federal customer, is looking for. And you're going to get adequate compensation for your efforts. I mean, that's like kind of common sense, but as you say there, and I've heard this expression quite a few times, you know, there's a shiny coin on the ground. I'm going to go after it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm saying margins are pretty tight these days. You don't have a lot of overhead, a lot of infrastructure to run business development operations. So you can't afford to chase everything. You can't afford to chase every customer. But if you systematically decide on the criteria that are going to be important to you, when you look for a customer, look for somebody you're going to feel comfortable with. I mean, maybe the Postal Service has, you know, a enormous amount of spending in your area, but a lot of people say they can be a very difficult customer. Maybe you don't want to go through that because that's going to suck up more of your resources,
right,
to chase the work and to maintain it, maintain satisfactory performance, than it would be if you went to, say, maybe the Department of Labor, which might be, for what you're capable of doing as a contractor, might be a far more suitable customer.
Right. A difficult customer can translate into increased costs that you may,
yes,
likely, you know, if it's a firm fixed price contract, are you going to recoup that or not, depending on what those difficulties entail, right?
Yeah, one boss used to say to me, not all revenue is created equal.
That's right. That's right. Are there, you know, so thinking along that, you know, when you're choosing a suitable customer, I know you know, there's a traditional sort of BD criteria. I know you like to extend beyond those. Can you give us a quick two or three of those, some of those, that extended BD criteria?
Right. And, you know, it's not to say that these are brand new ideas or thinking, but it's way I like to systematically work with clients to expand the way that they look at the market. If you got those traditional things of, gee, does the customer have money? Fine. Right. Let's expand a little bit. What is going to be the potential revenue stream over time? And are there other contractors you'll be competing against for that same dollar? Which gets more into why you need to pick the right kind of customer. Do I know that particular agency? That's another traditional set of or criterion. But it's also important that you know what the agency knows about you and your credibility. And, you know, some companies actually spend money on market research. Not me. I don't do this kind of work, but spend money on those kinds of market research efforts to find out what does the marketplace, what do these agencies think of me? I was involved in a long time ago in a consulting effort, and we interviewed a bunch of potential customers on behalf of our client, who is a very well-known, very large services firm. And almost without exception, the government customers speaking to us as a independent third party said, you know, they do great work. They write a beautiful plan, but then they leave it on the desk and they walk out and we don't know how to implement it.
Right.
You know, so when we told this to the client says, uh-oh, you know, it is realized that, you know, they don't know enough about me and my credibility to be able to help them add value and be able to help them in achieving their mission.
Interesting. One of the things I know you have observed is that you should definitely consider, you know, sort of the acquisition proficiency of organizations. I think that goes back to the difficulties issue. Do you have any additional thoughts on that?
It does. And again, think about your business development resources, tight margins. A lot of people are getting rid of their infrastructure. You may not have a lot of resources to be able to chase many different customers. But even if you try and chase one customer, I'm saying that part of those criteria that you should consider, again, in selecting a customer, but also in how you're going to deal with that customer if you have selected it, is knowing enough about how their acquisition system works or doesn't work. We all know the acquisition system isn't where it needs to be, doesn't work that well. A lot of people in the government don't understand the dynamics that happen in the marketplace. And on the other side of the table, a lot of industry doesn't understand what the government's going through and dealing right. with their inboxes full of actions.
Right, and the stakeholders behind the scenes that have to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah, and understanding that whole ecosystem.
Ray, we have to take our last break. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund of Birch Grove Consulting. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion a little bit about, you know, what you need to think about when you're looking for a suitable customer. But then we'll also turn to look at, you know, what does an election year mean for the budget? Hopefully maybe talk a little category management and also acquisition management, which we actually just touched on. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund of Birch Grove Consulting. Ray is going to be appearing near and dear to the coalition's heart. He'll be part of a budget panel at our spring conference, April 28th, out in Falls Church at the Fairview Marriott. We're looking forward to that conversation, Ray. And Ray, you know, we were talking about acquisition and the proficiency, let's say, of an acquisition organization for a particular agency when you're trying to identify a suitable customer. And I just wanted to, you know, go back to that. I know a lot of it boils back to the FAR and do people actually read the FAR or not? and did you have any final thoughts on that before we turn to category management?
Sure. You need to do a lot of investigation of how that particular potential customer handles your kind of product or service. I mean, sometimes you might find services under LPTA, regardless of what the complexity is. Well, that means that there's some inherent risk associated with for you as a contractor. What I like to do also is to look at something as mundane as FedBizOps and look at the history of that particular agency's buying habits. And what's curious about some of these agencies is that when it's time for the continuing resolution on the 1st of October, which we know is going to happen again this year, some agencies freeze and they just don't do anything. When in fact, if they read the FAR, they could do all sorts of things to kind of get positioned for some of the more complicated acquisitions that they anticipate during the year. They can't execute anything because they don't have any funding, additional funding. They've only got what they can continue on under the previous activity, previous fiscal year. But it's fascinating to look at that. And so if you know an agency's buying habits mean they're going to freeze during that time, that means you're going to have to be marking time with your business development effort. Maybe you got a capture team, and that capture team is going to be sitting on the bench essentially during that time.
Right. Or then you may have another agency who's willing to put out the RFIs and draft RFPs, knowing that they'll have the money eventually and not truly freeze. I mean, yeah, you do have to understand that. Because then, again, that's a cost of doing business. Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm going to throw some, I'm just throw category management out there and get your reaction or thoughts in that area as to how you think it's changing the market or not, or?
I don't think we have enough data to know how it really is changing the market. I would say my opinion that I don't believe the administration has a good handle on the market dynamics to know exactly what steps they are taking and how those steps are affecting the market. But I do hear anecdotes of companies that sell product saying, this is killing us and we probably can't afford to participate anymore. Yeah, it's only a small part of our international business, but it is something that gets in our way. We can't afford to participate because the prices are creeping up or the prices are being forced down or, something is happening. It's causing the dynamics to go haywire. If you look at what the administration is saying that category management saves money. And then they go back to this thing called the Federal Procurement Data System and say, see, we spent less, which was kind of interesting because one of those recent memos from the White House said, hey, we spent less, so therefore category management is working. No, you spent less because there was a drawdown in Southwest Asia. And oh, by the way, that was the year that sequestration happened, which froze a lot of procurement activity. So we don't know yet. We don't have a good handle on this. And I just really don't believe the government has a good handle on what they're doing, the ramifications of what they're doing.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, in talking to people, the hope or the goal, one of the goals is to identify, subject matter experts who understand a particular industry sector and to then embrace best practices to try to, get that sound business outcome from both sides. Do you have any thoughts on that piece of it?
Well, that's the extent that those subject matter experts are placed into category responsibilities. So one of the 10 government-wide categories and one of the 10 defense categories. But you look at some of those categories, and they are actually a mix of business sectors. So can you treat everybody in the category the same? If one of the business sectors is biomedical instrumentation and another sector within that same category is data processing equipment, it's two different markets. And that's what kind of concerns me. I don't like NAICS codes. I can go on for another hour on that one.
Right, okay. Yeah. We can do a whole show on that, right?
Yeah, a whole show on that. But, I think that there are smarter ways of looking at the market. And even the way the budget is put together is kind of along those lines, but it lumps together things, all things equipment. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you buy a $500,000 instance of enterprise software, you've just bought equipment.
Right.
That's the way it's considered.
Okay, that's a good point. So we are, we're getting close. We've got a couple minutes left, and I want to give you a chance to talk. We are in, an election year, as we all know. A very interesting one.
Yes.
And it gets more interesting every day. From a budget perspective, maybe it's not quite so interesting in terms of how rapidly change takes place. Can you talk a little bit about, how budgets are impacted in the fiscal profiles when you go from one administration to the next?
Yeah, well, the bottom line is they don't change that much. Now, you know how long the budget cycle is. It's like a year and a half.
Yeah.
Budget cycle is very long. So right now, this month of April, the administration is doing the 2018 budget,
mm-hmm.
which will be submitted to Congress in early 2017. But that will be after the president leaves the White House. There'll be a new president who will be responsible for submitting the past president's budget. There isn't a lot of change that a new incoming administration can do between early November and early February. Yeah, you can make some little change, but it's not a lot. And then there's a lot of programs out there that still need to be funded because of momentum or because they've got continuing authorization from Congress. There's stuff that's going to continue going on. It isn't going to change that much in the 2018 budget. And so the first one that the next president can really influence is 2019. And we'll have to see how that plays out because we're going to have to see who gets into the White House. But all that aside, now you've got still election season. There will be people that should be sitting at their offices in the Hill, which are, next couple of months, or they've got roughly 60 days to finish off appropriations, but they're going to be out campaigning, either for themselves or for party candidates. They're going to be going to the national conventions, both of which may be contested. We don't know, but there's going to be a lot of distractions. So appropriations aren't going to be forthcoming, and that just kind of puts a damper on the actual spending and the new program activity, and of course, we're going to have a CR.
Right.
I mean, I think we all know that. So isn't going to change a lot, but it kind of takes a little bit of the momentum out of some of these programs in their execution. And that means that the procurement system will slow down just a little bit. But what is being considered now on the Hill for 2017, which will be a new administration, is President Obama's last budget.
Right.
Well, not last budget, second to last budget.
All right. Well, so the more things change, the more they stay the same.
That's right.
Can I use a cliche there to close the show? I want to thank my guest, Ray Bjorklund of Birchgrove Consulting, for sharing his insights today on the budget process, what the 2017 budget looks like, and what contractors need to think about with that $742 billion
market
and all those.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, all those below the surface sort of changes and things that people need to think about when they're looking for a suitable customer, huh? Get all the buzzwords in, right?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Again, thanks, Ray. I appreciate it. You've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf. Only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.